Let's talk sports. This is Kent Batty, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, and I'm going to be reading to you today mostly from the USA Today Sports Weekly for the period beginning March 11th. But, as you might suspect, the Sports Weekly is full of baseball news this week and little else. But I feel like college basketball deserves a little coverage, and there's so much of it due to the conference tournaments that I'm going to be selective and just read about some of the coaching changes, particularly since one involves one of our own Arizona coaches, Arizona State, that is, and a few other coaches. So we'll start with that. So this article is from ESPN. Tracking the latest men's college basketball coaching carousel. With the 2026 basketball coaching carousel kicked into high gear, with more than 20 jobs already announcing changes, including six power conference positions, despite schools moving quickly at the ends of their respective seasons, an even larger contingent of programs at the low and mid-major level have opted to stay the course with their embattled coaches. Will that trend continue at the power conference level? That's been the question for weeks among industry sources, with more jobs than usual hovering right around a 50-50 chance of turning into openings. As we'll get to shortly, the rest of this week could determine how long power conference carousel keeps spinning this spring. Whether it's weeks or months, this will be your one-stop shop for the entire carousel, the latest news and buzz from around the country, primers on the big jobs as they open, and analysis on all the dominoes that fall. So we're starting with the Arizona State Sun Devils. It didn't take Arizona State long to make a decision on Coach Bobby Hurley's future. Hours after the Sun Devils' season-ending blowout loss to Iowa State in the Big 12 tournament, the school announced it wasn't renewing or extending Hurley's expiring contract, and his 11-year tenure had come to an end. It was the expected outcome for most of the past year, with Arizona State missing the NCAA tournament in five of the last six seasons. The Big 12 has established itself as a dominant basketball league, finishing as the number one conference in KenPom in nine of the last 13 seasons and ranking second in three of the other four. The conference routinely sends seven-plus teams to the NCAA tournament and three teams to the Sweet 16 on a regular basis. Arizona State has not been particularly competitive in recent years and would rank somewhere in the bottom half of the conference's head coaching jobs. There's been minimal recent success, reaching one Sweet 16 since 1975, and that came in 1995. It's been fighting an uphill battle since moving to the Big 12, although its commitment and resources on the football side provide some optimism if the Sun Devils can get it rolling on the hardwood. The location is appealing to plenty of candidates, too. Who might be in the mix? Well, there are several directions Athletic Director Graham Rossini can go to replace Hurley. Two of the more prominent names that have constantly been mentioned over the last few weeks have been St. Mary's Randy Bennett and New Mexico's Eric Olin. Bennett is a Mesa, Arizona native who has built St. Mary's into one of the most successful programs on the West Coast over the last 25 years. The program has been to 11 NCAA tournaments in his tenure, and this should be the Gaels' fifth straight year going to the Big Dance. He hasn't previously shown much interest in leaving St. Mary's, but Gonzaga's departure from the WCC is a new wrinkle. While the Lobos struggled down the stretch of Olin's first regular season at the helm, he showed serious coaching chops at UC San Diego, including leading the Tritons to 30 wins in an NCAA tournament appearance last season. He also has a long-standing relationship with Rossini. Could popular mid-major names Jared Calhoun from Utah State or Josh Schertz from St. Louis be interested? What about a successful veteran West coach like UC Irvine's Russell Turner or Grand Canyon's Bryce Drew? There are also a couple of wildcard names, Creighton's Mike McDermott could be nearing his departure from the Blue Jays, already naming Alan Huss as his head coach in waiting last spring. McDermott has long enjoyed spending time in the Phoenix and Scottsdale area, so a move could be potentially appealing. Then there's UC Santa Barbara assistant Derek Glasser, who played at Arizona State and was a college and high school teammate of former Sun Devil star James Harden. Sources indicate it's a long shot, but he'll certainly have his backers. Now, I'll read just a couple of more of these coaching changes blurbs, those that may be of more than passing interest to our listeners. First, I'm going to read about the changes at Syracuse. Syracuse officially informed head coach Adrian Autry of his firing on Wednesday morning after a three-season run. Autry was the successor to Hall of Famer Jim Boeheim, who retired in 23 after 47 years as head coach of the Orange. A former Syracuse player under Boeheim, Autry spent 12 seasons as an assistant coach on Boeheim's staff before taking over as head coach. Who will hire the next coach? The firing was not a surprise. The only question was timing, which could also potentially impact the search for a new head coach. Syracuse athletic director John Wildhack announced his retirement last month and plans to leave the school on July 1st. Syracuse has not officially announced his replacement yet, though college football bowl season executive director Nick Carparelli is considered the favorite. It has been understood that Wildhack would let Autry go. Then the incoming athletic director would make the next hire, although sources told ESPN that Wildhack has been working behind the scenes on the preliminary stages of the search for weeks. What's the perception of that job? Boeheim built Syracuse into one of the most consistent and prominent programs in college basketball over his five decades at the helm. They went to five Final Fours, won the 2003 national championship, and were a staple in the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. The March runs papered over the cracks of a program that didn't finish better than sixth in the ACC in any of Boeheim's last nine seasons, though, and finished 14th in two of Autry's three seasons as head coach. They are not a ready-made contender anymore. That said, the NIL structure has improved, and there were certainly enough resources to put together a talented roster with March expectations entering this season. What names come up? Three current head coaches stand out. Siena's Jerry McNamara, St. Louis's Josh Schertz, and South Florida's Brian Hodson. McNamara is a Syracuse legend and was on Boeheim's staff alongside Autry for 12 years before spending one season under Autry as associate head coach. McNamara just led Siena to the MAC tournament, that's M-A-A-C tournament title, and an NCAA tournament bid on Tuesday, taking the Saints to their first big dance since 2010. Siena went 4-28 the season before McNamara took over. Just 2 years later, it won 23 games. Schertz is arguably the most sought-after mid-major coach of the cycle, along with Utah State's Jared Calhoun. Schertz built a stellar reputation for himself with multiple Division II Final Four appearances at Lincoln Memorial, then led Indiana State to 32 wins in 23-24, and now has St. Louis tracking toward the NCAA tournament this season. Hodson is an upstate New York native whose stock has risen dramatically over the last few years. He has won back-to-back regular season titles in the past two seasons, split the Sun Belt title, and won 25 games at Arkansas State last season, then won the American in his first season at South Florida. Another name to watch is UConn assistant Luke Murray, who has been part of two national championship winning staffs under Dan Hurley in Storrs, that's University of Connecticut. Murray has been credited with helping build UConn's vaunted offensive system over the past few years. Now here's another one with local interest. That is the interest of former Arizona Wildcat Damon Stoudamire. With Stoudamire out, this is at Georgia Tech. With Stoudamire out, Belmont's Casey Alexander and Troy's Scott Cross have the most perceived momentum for the opening at Tech. Alexander just guided the Bruins to the Missouri Valley regular season title before losing in the conference tournament, while Cross has the Trojans going to back-to-back NCAA tournaments. Tech deputy AD, deputy AD that is, Brent Jones also overlapped with Cross at Troy. Other names that have been mentioned include Furman's Bob Ritchie, Tennessee assistant Justin Gainey, App State or Appalachian State, as most of you would know it, Dustin Kearns, former NC State coach Kevin Keats, and George Mason's Tony Skin. Long Island Nets coach Imfan Udofia, who played at Tech, has been linked as well. And then one more. This is the Kansas State Wildcats, one of our Big Ten foes here at Arizona. With the mid-February filing of Jerome Tang, K-State is furthest along among the power conference searches. Utah State's Jared Calhoun is considered the favorite for the position. The Ohio native could opt to slow play his decision and wait to see if the Cincinnati or Pittsburgh roles open and either program expresses interest. Belmont's Casey Alexander and Creighton associate head coach Alan Huss are also involved. Northern Iowa's Ben Jacobson is believed to be on the list as well. Well, and I think that concludes the basketball head coaching changes that might be of interest to our listeners. All right, so let's turn to our baseball stories. And I'm going to start with a couple of stories that have connections to the World Baseball Conference now going on. First, from Phoenix, by Bob Nightingale, New York Yankees slugger Aaron Judge walked into Team USA's clubhouse last week, stared at his uniform, and felt his heart race when he put it on over his massive shoulders. So this is what it means to represent the United States of America. While players like Bryce Harper, Alex Bregman, Bobby Witt Jr., and Pete Crow Armstrong have already played a handful of times in international tournaments for the USA, this is the first time Judge has ever played for his country. Several of us probably have people who serve in the military or people that we know that served in the military, said Judge, captain of Team USA. That was the first thing I thought of was there's individuals out there that have sacrificed everything for this country to allow me to have my wife safe at home and my daughter safe at home, and I get a chance to come out here and play a kid's game. So that was really just floating through my head, just the history of this country, what it's been through, and the people that have sacrificed the biggest sacrifice. So even now, there's conflict going on. People are sacrificing. A lot of things are happening in the world right now, you know. So I just count my blessings every day, and I get a chance to come out here and play the game that I love. Really, just having the name on the back of the jersey, Judge laughed, got his attention considering that the Yankee players don't have names on the back of their uniform. It's kind of weird saying my name on the back of the jersey to start, says Judge. But I flipped that right over and looked at the front where it said USA. For me, it just really hit home. He was speaking at Team USA's workout day before playing two exhibition games against the San Francisco Giants and the Rockies and leaving for the WBC's first round in Houston. Judge spoke to the team before it took the field, still in awe of the abundance of talent surrounding him in the room and knowing what this means to everyone. There's Tampa Bay Rays reliever Griffin Jacks, who graduated from the U.S. Air Force Academy, and Pittsburgh Pirates Cy Young winner Paul Skaines, who attended the Air Force Academy for 2 years. There's Boston Red Sox ace Garrett Whitlock, whose father Larry served in Vietnam, and plenty of others who have close family members or even distant relatives who served in the military. When USA manager Mark DeRosa called Skaines to invite him on the team, and even had a presentation prepared to help convince him to play, Skaines didn't need to hear another word. He was like, I want to do this for every serviceman and woman. That protects our freedom, DeRosa said. That's all that needs to be said. There's something very special about representing your country. We take it seriously. We want to enjoy the game and have fun, but certainly understand the responsibility that comes with it. And there's Detroit Tigers two-time Cy Young winner Tarek Skubal, who is in line to earn in excess of $400 million as a free agent this winter. He hadn't planned on participating in the WBC, but ignored the advice of his agent and others to pitch for Team USA. It speaks volumes, definitely, because of what's ahead of him, Judge said. You know, He's got the two Cy Young Awards, but this guy's about to make a half a billion dollars here in the next season. So for him to put it all on the line for his country and come out here and show up for us? Judge can certainly relate. He was a free agent after the 22 season and couldn't commit to playing in the World Baseball Classic. He wound up signing a 9-year, $360 million contract to return to the Yankees, but had already decided he would stay in spring training camp no matter where he signed. Yet, after watching the exhilarating 23 WBC with Team Japan beating USA in the final, with Shohei Ohtani striking out Mike Trout for the final out, and how much joy the players experienced, Judge wasn't about to miss this opportunity. He has taken great pride speaking to his teammates, telling them it was an honor to wear the same uniform. "The room has a presence," Judge said. "Not just the players, but the coaching staff too. You got all-stars, silver sluggers, World Series champs, and some of the best ball players who ever played the game in one room. It was pretty cool to get a chance to address them, to get a chance to be a captain for your country. It's pretty hard to describe." Said DeRosa, "Aaron is a special cat, a special guy. He's the best hitter in the game. His presence is undeniable when he walks into the room. So for him to put his heart and soul behind this, it's huge." Certainly, with the WBC coming on the heels of the United States winning the Olympic gold in men's and women's hockey, has Team USA hyped to continue the run. Alex Bregman, who was on Team USA's WBC championship team in 2017, says he has never been on an international team that didn't win the title. Bryce Harper, who last played in an international tournament in 2009 when he was 16, says he's more stoked than ever to represent the U.S. after watching the gold medal hockey games. I mean, everybody watched the Olympics and saw what the women's and men's teams did winning the gold, Harper said. I mean, I was glued to the TV for those 2 to 3 weeks. So I definitely think it's a stepping stone into what we're doing now. I think a lot of people are super excited to watch us play. While Team USA has won the WBC just once in the 5 times it's been played since 2006, the Americans are the favorites this time around, particularly with their prized pitching staff. It's easily the best collection of talent they've assembled, with DeRosa convinced the team is almost flawless. The team is so loaded that Hall of Famer Ken Griffey Jr. is the team photographer. Team USA started San Francisco Giants ace Logan Webb in Game 1 on March 6th against Brazil, Scooble in Game 2 on March 7th against Great Britain, Skanes in Game 3 on March 9th against Mexico, and New York Mets starter Nolan McLean in the fourth and final pool game March 10th against Italy. Of course, we know now, folks, that that didn't go so well as the USA lost 8-6. Oh well, they're in the final four. "This is a field of dreams, to be honest with you," said DeRosa. "I wanted to build a true team, a team that the other countries would look at and say, wow, there's no weakness. The lineup is right, left, all the way down. Everybody knows their role. The bullpen is split neutral. Mason Miller is the best closer in the game. You got versatility off the bench. We got selfless guys. We got high character, speed, power. This is a team that kind of feeds off each other, not just throw an all-star team in there. This is a true team, a team that has 1 6-foot-7 captain with players who have won 6 MVP awards and 6 Cy Young awards. There is," Judge said, "a lot of greatness in that room. Pretty special." And here's another story from Bob Nightingale. 2-time Cy Young Award winner Tarek Skubal, who grew up just 3 hours away from Phoenix in a small, dusty town where folks stopped to get gas on their drive to Las Vegas, who had only one school even interested in giving him a college scholarship, lets his mind race as his USA teammates walk past him into the clubhouse. "It was just a few years ago he was a nobody in Kingman, Arizona, and now, on the eve of the World Baseball Classic, the Detroit Tigers lefty was just 9 months away from receiving the largest contract by a pitcher in baseball history. For the most part, I try to live in the moment," Skubal says. and just appreciate where my feet are and continue to strive to be the best version of myself. Yet, in a sea of stardom on Team USA, filled with other MVPs, Cy Young Award winners, and All-Stars, Scooble is the one getting the most attention. He's the one everyone wants next winter, the one who will break the bank and perhaps the first American League pitcher to ever win three consecutive Cy Young Awards. Scooble would love to stay put in Detroit, but in a wide-ranging interview with USA Today Sports, he reveals that the Tigers never made a single long-term offer trying to keep him this winter, or even bothered to negotiate with him after he filed for salary arbitration. There is no offer, Scooble tells USA Today, and there won't be an offer until the end of the season. My focus is on playing baseball and winning this year. I'll deal with the contract stuff at the end of the year, and then we'll kind of see. And that's fine. It's their decision. Scooble has no idea if the Tigers are serious about keeping him past this year, considering their only long-term offer was 2 years ago for less than $80 million. But even if he departs, he savors the idea of being on the first Tigers team to win a World Series in 42 years. This is a team built for October, signing Houston Astros ace Framber Valdez to a 3-year, $115 million contract and bringing back 3-time Cy Young winner Justin Verlander. That's where my focus is, trying to win a World Series for the city of Detroit, the team that drafted me in 2018, Scooble says. Tiger fans are excited. They're really invested in this club, and so are we. There's a different energy in camp this year about the guys that we brought in and additions that we've made. And there's a true belief in trying to win the World Series. I think that's awesome. It's not that it wasn't a belief last year, but I think the focus was more realistic, though, on kind of winning the division and getting back into the playoffs. We didn't win the division, but we made the playoffs and made another good run. You can kind of see that a World Series is attainable with the additions we've made, and that's all you can ask for, is to play on a team with World Series aspirations year in and year out. So it's going to be a ton of fun this year. Scooble threw 41 pitches in the 9-1 victory March 7th over Great Britain. He was supposed to be one and done. After some deliberation, he is sticking to his original plan to return to the Tigers' spring training after his lone appearance in the WBC. Scooble had always planned to return to spring training in Lakeland, Florida after making his start on March 7th. But in the days before the tournament, Scooble stressed how much he was loving the experience and hinted at a plan to regroup with the national team in Miami and at least to be a cheerleader. And after his scheduled outing in Houston, Scooble explicitly said that things have changed. When you get into these environments, when you get this team, it's hard to walk away from that, Scooble said after tossing 3 strong innings in the 9-1 win. I didn't expect these types of emotions to run through my brain or my thoughts to differ. I was pretty committed to making a start and getting back to camp, Scooble said. Things have changed, obviously. That's why I'm going to have some conversations to try and figure out a plan for me. Scooble, at 29, is expected to sign the richest contract of any pitcher in MLB history this winter, and his USA teammates were more than understanding about his plan. He's got the 2 Cy Young Awards, but this guy's about to make $500 million here in the next offseason, said Judge. So, for him to put it all on the line for his country and come out here and show up for us, you know, maybe it's just one game, but you know there's a risk with everything you do. And for him to take that risk and come out here and be with us, the boys love it. If this were a year ago, Scooble would be staying with Team USA and available to pitch in the potential World Baseball Classic Championship game. If this were next year and Scooble was already signed, he wouldn't have a second thought about staying around. But this is 2026, and after 2 sleepless nights and emotional conversations with virtually every USA teammate, and heart-to-heart talks with agent Scott Boras and future Hall of Famer Justin Verlander, Scooble stuck to his original plan. When asked if he was at peace with the decision, he shook his head. No, he said, I'm still not. The only way I'll be at peace with it is in Miami after we win the whole thing. It's a tough decision, you know. It's hard. It's really hard. I've been trying to make it work. I love America. I love everything that this tournament's about. Simply, with a $400 million plus payday awaiting him, along with the pitching schedule not lining him up to start for opening day for the Tigers, he couldn't let his emotions overcome his judgment. I think the resounding message from all the guys was, make sure to take care of yourself and your family, Scoople said. We support you no matter what happens. I appreciate that because these guys are the guys you want to go to war with. These guys grind. They care. I love it. The preparation has been unbelievable to watch and push myself to be a better version of myself. So that's something that I'll take for the rest of my life. Scooble was also provided plenty of research from Boris and his staff showing that arm injuries typically happen in spring training and right after the All-Star break. The idea of risking an injury that could derail his massive payday was too great to ignore. A lot of that risk and injury stuff is kind of where I drew the line of like, there's a lot of risk associated in that, Scooble said. And then you put in the adrenaline. There's just a big lump, or rather jump, in workload. Just being smart. Obviously, I know what the season means too. Team USA will now stick with its original plan of having National League Cy Young winner Paul Skaines pitch in the semifinal game, with New York's second-year starter Nolan McClain pitching the potential championship game. DeRosa talked with Scooble for about 45 minutes during their workout on March 8th, but his coaches and teammates wanted to give Scooble room to make up his own mind. I can't be the reason they're sitting in the room, DeRosa said. That's just too much. I would be worried about every pitch he throws. I know what's at stake for him. I'm over the moon he decided to show in the first place for us and take the ball for us. I think it meant a lot to a lot of guys in that room. We know where his heart is. If he was in a different situation, he wouldn't be leaving. But I also understand that 99.9% of the guys, if given his ability to get to free agency and just generational wealth on the table and everything he's got in front of him, a chance to win three Cy Youngs, I was proud that he even showed for us. There wasn't a single player on Team USA who voiced any disappointment that Scooble was departing as originally planned. Tarek's awesome, awesome human being, an awesome player, one of the best pitchers in the world, USA third baseman Alex Bregman said. And we kind of all understand the situation that he's in. Whatever decision he was going to make, we fully have his back. We were thankful that he even showed up to pitch a single inning for us. We know where his heart is. We know how tough a decision it is to make. The experience was nothing like he possibly envisioned. It blew out of the water, he said. I had no idea. I just assumed it would be like an all-star game type of vibe, and it's absolutely not. It couldn't be further from that. It was awesome. I loved it. It makes you really proud to be an American. Scooble realizes he can't control the narrative for those upset or angry that he's leaving the team, but he's comforted by his teammates' support, knowing that if they were in his situation with that payday awaiting, most would be making the same decision. They understand how badly I want to keep competing and keep playing with this team. I respect everybody here, and I respect everybody in Lakeland, and I think that feeling is mutual, so it means a ton, you know? I really care about what my peers say and the fact that my peers have my back. It means the world to me. In MLB history, 23 pitchers have won multiple Cy Young Awards, and 12 of those have won in back-to-back seasons. Only four of those were left-handers: Sandy Koufax in 65 and 66, Randy Johnson in 99 through 2002, Kershaw 213 through 2013 through 2014, and now Scooble 24 and 25. No AL pitcher has ever won three in a row, which Scooble can accomplish in 2026. Scooble grew up watching Kershaw, his Team USA teammate. It'll also be another really special thing in my career, being able to share the clubhouse with all those guys that are very elite, Scooble said. Getting to come together for one common goal will be pretty special. The pitching coach is Andy Pettitte. Clayton Kershaw is on the team. That's an obvious. I'm excited to get with those guys and just talk. And for a little geographic balance, I'm going to read an article about a West Coast player, Mike Trout. This is also by Nightingale. Mike Trout isn't vowing to be the Mike Trout of old, the man who was baseball's greatest player for nearly a decade. The 11-time All-Star and 3-time MVP winner insists he's not angry or upset that he no longer is considered one of the game's elite players, or even listed among the top 100 players by MLB Network. Yet, ever so quietly, the Los Angeles Angels say that they see Trout's eyes smoldering, that intensity burning inside him, and the confidence to prove he can return to being one of the game's finest players. "I know what I'm capable of doing," Trout said this spring, "and I feel great." The Angels can see it in his demeanor, hear it in his voice, and watch it in his interactions. "I'm excited for him. That's my boy," Angels special assistant Torrey Hunter, the 9-time gold winner, tells USA Today Sports. "I don't care what nobody says. I think he's going to have a good year, man. To hear his enthusiasm this year is way different than any other year. I think he's got a lot to prove. He's going to prove everybody wrong, all the naysayers." It's not as if Trout is necessarily going to produce a 1.0 OPS as he did for 3 consecutive seasons or hit 40 home runs again, and he certainly won't be stealing 40 bases. But to believe he's finished, to think he can no longer help a team, then you do not know Mike Trout, who for 9 seasons in a row finished in the top 5 in the American League MVP balloting. He doesn't need any rankings or lists to promote himself, Angels general manager Paul Manassian says. "But this is a motivated person. I know the last 3, 4, 5 years haven't been what any of us have hoped, but I believe he's in constant competition with himself to be as good as he possibly can be." It's not even chasing the old Mike Trout, but it's being as good as he can possibly be right now. You see how relaxed he is showing up, how confident he is. He can still do things that other people can't. There's a reason Trout commands such a presence in the Angels camp, with teammates still in awe, remembering the days when he was the greatest player on the planet, drawing comparisons to Hall of Famer Mickey Mantle and all of the great center fielders before him. "My kids were wanting me to retire this winter," says 36-year-old Angels reliever Brent Suter. "But one day I told them, what if Mike Trout wants me to be his teammate? They went crazy. My 7-year-old son started chanting Mike Trout to his friends in school. They're so excited, as am I. I never played with a bona fide first ballot Hall of Famer. He's given more to this game than you can imagine. He's such a huge ambassador for our game. Really, it's an honor to play with him." Trout, at 34, revealed this spring that he intends to return to center field, just like old times, a position he last played on a regular basis 4 years ago. Trout sat down with Manassian and rookie manager Kurt Suzuki when he arrived at camp on February 15th, strongly expressed his desire to play center, and they promised they'd give him every opportunity. They don't have a true center fielder, so why not? "I told Suzuki I'd play anywhere," Trout says, "but obviously I'd prefer center. I just feel more comfortable out there. I feel like I'm at my best when I'm in center. When I'm out there, it's just a lot better for me than worrying about the corners." The Angels are fully on board, believing he can play 4, perhaps even 5 days a week in center field with occasional games in right and at DH. "He's in a great place," Manassian says. "He's still strong, still explosive. We're not closing the door on anything. Kurt and I are on the same page. He's got the ability to play all 3 outfield spots. He'll do whatever we need. If we wanted him to play shortstop, he'd do that too." Trout is cool playing anywhere, but wants no part of being a full-time DH again as he did a year ago. He opened the 25 season as a right fielder, but after 22 games, he suffered a bone bruise on his surgically repaired left knee running the bases. He returned a month later and was the Angels' full-time DH the remainder of the season. He wound up producing the worst season of his career, hitting only .232 with 26 home runs, 64 RBI, and a career-low .797 OPS. Perhaps it was no coincidence that Trout's last great season was when he was a center fielder in 2022. He hit 40 homers with 80 RBI and a 999 OPS in 119 games that season. He has since been riddled with back, knee, and calf injuries, playing in only 241 games out of a possible 486. Trout's injury history prevented him from being able to participate in the World Baseball Classic, where he was the captain of the team for the USA in 2023. He likely wasn't going to be in the starting lineup, but he's badly wanted to play until discovering that the WBC insurance policy wouldn't cover him in case of injury, potentially voiding the remainder of his $177.25 million contract remaining in the last 5 years. "It's disappointing," Trout says. "I definitely wanted to run it back. But, you know, with all those guys..." Now, staying with the Angels all spring, it gives him a chance to prove he can be an everyday center fielder again. If he didn't believe he could pull it off, he wouldn't be so adamant about the move. But he feels completely healed. Lost about 6 pounds, and for the first time in 5 years, is coming off a normal winter of workouts. Besides, the Angels actually are a better team with a healthy Trout in center field. The Angels could move Joe Adell back to his natural position in right field and have Josh Loa in left with Jorge Soler as the primary DH. "I feel like when I was in center, it was less stress on my body," Trout says. "To be honest, right field felt like I was running a lot. It's just a preference thing." Talking to some other outfielders, they feel the same way sometimes, that center is less on your legs. "I just feel like more confident in center. And fans, I would tell you, I'm not sure I really understand that. I played some outfield in my time. I felt like you ran a lot in center." Well, back to the article. And yes, there's also the matter of pride. It's tough for anyone to be told to give up their natural position despite being reminded constantly that Father Time is undefeated. For Mike, "I can only imagine that you're a center fielder for so long and then they tell you to go to right or to DH. That's pride," says Hunter, who moved to right field in 2011 to make room for Peter Boros and Trout. "You got to swallow it." But he lost a lot of weight. He was strong at the top, so strong, it's heavy on the legs. Now he's going to be able to move more efficiently, so having him play center field might be a good thing. "Forget the physical burden of playing center," Hunter says. "It's the mental aspect that could greatly benefit Trout, knowing he can provide value on the defensive side, too." "When you're an athlete like Trout, playing center field for so long," Hunter says, "he used that defense to pump him up offensively. Defense never slumps, but it can actually pump you up. But if you're not playing defense and you struggle at the plate, then all you do is go and sit down and watch more video. That's when the devil starts playing with your mind. Now he can go out there, and no matter what happens at the plate, he can always go out there and make something happen for the team. And if Trout is back and stays healthy, well, maybe the Angels can start dreaming of being a legitimate contender again." At the end of the day, Manasian says, "A healthy Mike Trout obviously changes this club. I think he's primed for a big year. We're lucky to have him." Now, this issue of USA Today Sports has quite a long section summarizing their predictions for each team in the league. So I think I'm going to read some of those, starting with our Western Division teams. Of course, the Diamondbacks division. So I'll start with the Diamondbacks. Now, USA is predicting they'll finish with the same record as they did last year, which was 80 and 82. So they list the projected lineup and the pitching, but I won't bother to go through that. You can get that from other sources, perhaps when we get closer to the starting game. But they list the keys to victory. Hanging in there. With four key players opening on the injured list, the Diamondbacks are entering the year with the hopes of hanging in the race until they get the majority of them back. Left fielder Lourdes Gurriel Jr. could return first, perhaps before the end of April. Lefty reliever A.J. Puk is likely next, maybe sometime in June. The most impactful return would be that of ace Corbin Burnes around the All-Star break, while reliever Justin Martinez could be back in August. If the Diamondbacks can hang around the race, they not only could benefit from those returns, but also add at the trade deadline. Finding relief. With Martinez and Pulk out, the bullpen looks like a potential trouble spot once again. But there are some reasons for hope. Right-handers Paul Sewald, Kevin Ginkel, and Ryan Thompson are reunited again. The trio helped key the club's surprise 2023 World Series run. The Diamondbacks would also be bolstered by a healthy year from ex-Yankees right fielder Jonathan Loaisiga. Boy, I don't know if I got that right. Loaisiga. Staying on the field, outfielder Corbin Carroll needed hamate surgery at the beginning of camp, though he could be back for opening day. Right-hander Merrill Kelly experienced back issues early in spring training. He, too, is hoping to avoid the injured list. The Diamondbacks have a little pitching depth, and a number of their position players' prospects are just about big league ready, so there's some reason to believe they're equipped to handle injuries. In the end, Zach Gallen keeps a few more balls in the ballpark, but an aging lineup can't keep up with the NL West. Next is the Colorado Rockies that USA projects at 57-105, which is at least better than their record last year of 43-119. Their keys to victory? Find a semblance of a core. Colorado got a breakthrough season from Hunter Goodman, who was a legit all-star and is potential future cornerstone. Despite a miserable season, Colorado did find some cohesion under manager Warren Schaefer after a 12-55 start, but won only four games in September. With few expectations, the goal at the big league level is to find more breakout stars around whom Colorado can build. Everyone in the projected opening day lineup is under 30, including Mickey Moniak. Remember him? He was the first overall draft pick as a high schooler by the Phillies in 2016 and showed signs of becoming an all-star with an 8.24 OPS in 135 games. Brendan Doyle has looked refreshed this spring after an up-and-down start to his career at the plate, including an OPS that slipped more than 100 points from 2024. Failures like that are good to learn from, and I think for all the younger guys, it's really beneficial, he told MLB.com. Lows are kind of what helps you get back to your highs. Doyle is also a two-time Gold Glove center fielder who can influence the roster in many ways. Pitching length? The Rockies won't outpitch many teams, but they have added some veteran starting pitchers, Michael Lorenzen, Jose Quintana, Tomoyuki Sugano, who can give them innings. It will be up to the young offense to put up big numbers in the traditions of strong past Rocky teams. In the end, the product is improved and the semblance of a plan is in place, but 100 losses are baked into that. And next is the dreaded Dodgers. USA Today has predicted they'll be 98-64, which I probably think the Dodgers will think is a bit of a downer. But their last year's record was 93-69, which I think is testimony to how tough our division is. Anyway, Dodgers' keys to victory? The rotation flood overwhelms opponents. They won back-to-back World Series with star starting pitching, shouldering reduced workloads, battling injuries, yet rounding in form just in time for the playoffs. Now, the rotation returns virtually intact and has been galvanized by the return of young, injured pitchers. Yet, even as they back off Blake Snell and keep a wary eye on postseason hero Yoshinobu Yamamoto, the Dodgers must hope that going nine deep over six innings retains enough starting pitcher punch to KO the NL West. They will take it easy with Snell. He has shoulder issues, who is 9-3 in his career in the playoffs and could be a game-changer in October. Very quickly, Mookie Betts has exuded confidence this spring that last year was something of an aberration. Oh, he produced a 4.9 WAR and was a Gold Glove finalist at shortstop, and famously completed the 6-3 double play that finished the Dodgers' title. But his OPS dropped to a career-worst 732, 104 adjusted. Don't know what that means, folks. He knows he can do better and expects as much. Former Mets closer Edwin Diaz's $69 million deal likely ended the Dodgers' ninth-inning woes. Yet, they will need more. Tanner Scott finding himself again, Blake Treinen putting it together for the one last run, Evan Phillips completing Tommy John surgery recovery to take down a late inning, all plausible, but still question marks for the moment. In the end, no double hangover for the two-time champs, who have too much of everything to avoid another run. Then we have the Padres out of San Diego. USA predicts they'll finish at 85 and 77, which is slightly worse than their record of 90 and 72 last year. Did they do enough this winter? While the Dodgers seemingly got better, the Padres didn't make the kind of offensive off-season splash that we've been accustomed to over the last 7 or 8 years. San Diego brought back starter Michael King, signed Miguel Andujar, took a flyer on Nick Castellanos after his release, and signing starting pitchers to one-year minor league deals. Will it regret not dipping its toes in the deeper end of free agency? What will Joe Musgrove contribute? Musgrove missed the entire 2025 season after having Tommy John surgery, but is a full go in spring training and is expected to break camp in the Padres' rotation, though his workload will likely be limited early. If that means skipping a start here or there or pushing me back a few days or a couple of days extra rest, I'm already at peace with having to do that if that means I get to throw in October, Musgrove said. Can Ramon Laureano do it again? Acquired from the Orioles at the trade deadline, Laureano hit 24 home runs with a career-high 76 RBI and his 8.55 OPS was nearly 150 points better than his previous five seasons. With that in mind, what exactly can the Padres expect from him in 26? If the 31-year-old regresses to the mean, San Diego's offense is suddenly a lot less potent. Left field is hardly the only spot in the lineup raising eyebrows, with first base and designated hitting positions that the Padres could have stood to upgrade. In the end, A.J. Preller keeps the card tricks going, and his sleight of hand puts them on the precipice of a wild card spot. And then last, we have the Giants from San Francisco. USA projects them at 82 and 80, one game better than their third place finish at 81 and 81 last year. Keys to victory? Eldridge makes an impact. First-rounder Bryce Eldridge saw limited time in San Francisco in 25, but he stands to potentially contribute heavily to the lineup in 26. Alongside power player Rafael Devers, international signee Jung-Hoo Lee, and shortstop Willy Adames, he could provide serious aid to an offense that finished 17th in WRC+, which measures hitters' overall value in the major leagues. The colossal lefty stick has boasted a 512 slugging percentage in the minors, and he could provide a much-needed thump in Oracle Park. Giants pitchers look to benefit from back-to-back Gold Glove-winning catcher Patrick Bailey. His finesse and much of his contribution to the team is winning strikes with pitch framing. However, the 2026 season will bring the automated ball strike, or ABS, challenge system that allows batters and pitchers to challenge umpire calls on balls and strikes. While limited, the system could take away some of San Francisco's advantage of a larger strike zone. Webb remains dominant. As the perennial Giants ace and the backbone of the starting rotation, Logan Webb has spent three consecutive seasons surpassing 200 innings. The sinker baller has received Cy Young votes since 2022, and has spearheaded the pitching staff as a steady leadership presence. For the Giants to maintain run prevention, Webb's authoritative hold on hitters must remain a constant. In the end, it's yet another 80 to 82 win season. But Tony Vitello makes it a little louder and zanier. With the time remaining, I think I'll cherry pick a few others of these team summaries, particularly from the National League, who are our mainstream opponents here in the Western Division. So we'll start with the Phillies. They're projected at 92-70, which is slightly worse than their 96-66 record of last year. And their keys to victory? Forgive Kirkering. Orion Kirkering sailed a throw in the bottom of the 11th inning in Game 4 of the NLDS that ended the Phillies' 25 playoff run. It has made the right-hander the unfortunate focus of a fan base that has faced postseason disappointment since 2008. Kirkering is a key piece in a deep bullpen that will look similar to what it was in 25, with Brad Keller from free agency as the main notable addition. The Phillies' 2025 regular season contained no shortage of thump from its more experienced lineup, but veterans Kyle Schwarber, Bryce Harper, and Trey Turner combined for a 208 batting average in the NLDS, with Schwarber signing a five-year, $150 million deal in December. The 26 offense will attempt to build on the 25 regular season success with all three franchise names returning. A few young players are poised to make an impact. Justin Crawford, at 22, is lined up to compete for the center field job. The team looks to fill holes in the outfield left by the departures of Nick Castellanos and Max Kepler over the winter. Additionally, Andrew Painter, another former first-rounder, is finally looking healthy. He could be a key addition to the rotation that on opening day will be without Zach Wheeler for venous thoracic outlet syndrome. Shortstop Aiden Miller could also play his way into an early or mid-season call-up. In the end, healthy by summer, Zach Wheeler helps Christopher Sanchez pitch them back into the World Series. Next, we'll cover the Brewers. They're projected at 87-75. Which is a fair amount worse than their last year record of 97-65. Jacob Mizorowski stole the show upon his debut last year, faded in the second half, and then became the Brewers' best pitcher in the postseason. With the young rotation around him, there will be much asked of Mizorowski in 2026. He must find more consistent command than he showed at times last year, when he walked 4.2 batters per nine innings. Mizorowski has ace potential. Is this the year where he takes a major stride forward and realizes it? There were plenty of offensive struggles on the left side of the infield last year, from Joey Ortiz's year-long rut to challenges at the hot corner before Caleb Durbin got going as the summer months went on. Ortiz is back as a starting shortstop, but now Durbin is gone, and in his place are David Hamilton, Luis Ronifo, and Jet Williams. Ortiz must beat his 593 OPS from 25, while one of the three third base options needs to step forward into a bigger role. When he's on the mound, Brandon Woodruff is still one of the game's better starters. He showcased that with a 3.20 ERA in 12 starts coming off shoulder surgery a year ago. After a lat strain sidelined Woodruff for the postseason, he's back on a one-year deal. The expectation is his velocity will be back to its prior levels now that he is 3 years post-surgery. How far the Brewers ultimately go may come down to the health of their big right-hander. In the end, not enough magic this time to overcome less fortunate turns in health and performance. Then we'll cover the Mets, also projected same as the Brewers at 87-75, slightly better than their 25 record of 83-79. Their keys to victory? Refilling the core. After the Mets withered down the stretch in 25 regular season and missed the playoffs, President of Baseball Operations David Stearns intimated that there would be changes. In the lineup, several homegrown favorites are gone in Pete Alonso and Brandon Nimmo. They have been replaced by Bo Bichette, Jorge Polanco, and Luis Robert Jr. Bichette, who signed a 3-year, $126 million deal, will play third base for the first time, and he will be counted upon in the heart of the batting order. The honeymoon is over for Juan Soto as he enters the second year of his record $765 million contract. That's quite a bit of money, fans. The Mets need him to carry them in the clutch moments over the course of the season. With runners in scoring position, he batted only .238 a season ago. He and Francisco Lindor carry the weight of the Mets lineup on their shoulders. The Mets pitching staff had crumbled down the stretch and produced an overall 4.03 ERA, seventh worst in the MLB. Much of that responsibility fell on the starting rotation, which was unable to get deep into games consistently. Rookie Nolan McLain was the exception. He'll be stepping into a bigger role this season. The Mets also traded two of their top prospects to bring in Freddy Peralta to top off the rotation. The 29-year-old right-hander's production will be incredibly important for the unit, having struck out 200 batters in three straight seasons. In the end, it works out. It really does. And an epic division battle with Philly unfolds in September. So let's take a look at the Cubs. They're projected at 88-74, slightly poorer than last year when they were 92-70. Will Cade Horton make the leap? Horton finished runner-up in NL Rookie of the Year voting, posting an 11-4 record with a 2.67 ERA in 118 innings, making his big league debut in May. Horton missed the Cubs NLDS against the Brewers with a rib injury, but says he's back to full strength at spring training. Coming off his injury season and a lengthy MLB season, the Cubs could limit his workload early in the season for the seventh overall pick from 2022. A late arrival to camp due to visa issues coming from Venezuela, Ballesteros, that's Moises Ballesteros, who's 22, made his mark in 20 games for the Cubs down the stretch and into the postseason. You saw the bat-to-ball skills. You saw the power, Cubs president Jed Hoyer said. He's a really gifted hitter. Obviously, he's going to have to come in here and earn that spot. Ballesteros can play first base or catcher in a pinch, but he struggled against lefties with a 577 OPS in 139 AAA at-bats. After an epic first half, 25 home runs and 27 stolen bases, Pete Crow Armstrong, the eventual Gold Glove winner, had just 6 homers and 8 steals with a 634 OPS game in his final 62 games. The 23-year-old is one of the most exciting young players in the game, and he needs to sustain his excellence through the summer if the Cubs hope to overtake the Brewers in the NL Central. With Alex Bregman on board, the Cubs are banking on PCA to flash his 5 tools deep into October. In the end, Alex Bregman helps deliver the first full-season division title since 2017. Well, there's some optimism for the Cubs. And then last, we'll finish up with the Atlanta Braves, who are projected at 84-78. Improving by 8 games over their last season record. Will Austin Riley and Ozzie Albies bounce back? Atlanta desperately needs production from two of their longtime infield cornerstones, both of whom have been hampered by injuries and inconsistency over the last two seasons. Returning to form will be a key for a Braves team hoping to prove its 25 postseason absence was just an aberration after 7 October trips in a row. And I'm afraid that's all the time I've got for today, fans. Once again, this is Kent Batty, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, and thank you for listening.